Welcome to Making Your Miles Count Production, an educational program to all Canadian lease owner-operators with your host, Robert Scaper.
Hello, Robert Scaper here from Making Your Miles Count Podcast. I'm going to do a little bit of talking about a little bit of a topic on the side, having to do actually a little bit with my second book, Choosing a Trucking Company. I actually did a little bit of a podcast a little while ago about the Pride Group when they went through a bankruptcy proceeding, and wanted to actually expound a little bit about that and the like. So here we got, first of all, I'm going to read an article, a well-written article, in my opinion, by James Menzies. I've met him a few times, and he probably doesn't know me or recognize me, but I'm a little bit of a fan of him. He writes for trucknews.com, and he's posted an article on the United Group of Companies CEO sentenced to jail time for contempt of court. Now, if anybody knows the United Group, it's somewhat, at least, associated with the Pride Group, but maybe not. I'm a little bit not sure about that, but they have gone through bankruptcy proceedings, and I'll read this article, and then I want to talk about a particular aspect of this. The CEO of United Group of Companies, a 300-plus truck fleet in Mississauga, Ontario, was sentenced to 4 days in jail for contempt of court for his involvement in bankruptcy proceedings against trucking firm Canada Motor Freight. The ruling came after a January 13th hearing in which the CEO, Davinder Singh Mangat, successfully had his original 15-day sentence reduced. A similar 15-day sentence against United Group director and founder Makan Bajwa was dropped, as was a 10-day sentence against Taj Dhaliwal, the company's manager of logistics and operations. Meanwhile, CMF officials, oh my goodness, Imran Hussein Satbar Singh Kalan and Sukhdeep Singh Arora were spared jail time, but each ordered to pay receiver Ernst & Young $20,000 after also being found in contempt. Now, sorry for butchering these names. I'm actually reading it as fast as I can, and even though I pre-read it, I'm not a big, I'm not good with names in other languages. Well, I find that these in contempt have not cooperated with the receiver or otherwise purged their contempt. I have found that their contempt, while serious, was not in a category sufficiently serious to require imprisonment, the judge ruled. In addition to the 4-day sentence against Mangat, he was ordered to pay the receiver $30,000, while Dhaliwal was ordered to pay $5,000. United itself was ordered to pay $113,887.87 to the receiver to cover costs incurred due to its inability to access affected assets despite a court order. So what went down? The Canadian Motor Freight had a related number company in Ontario sought creditor protection under the company's Creditors Arrangement Act last year. However, they, along with United Group of Companies, are accused of defying court orders granting the receiver access to the company's assets, which were moved to the United Group yard at 1191 Ellington Ave East in Mississauga, Ontario. Ernst & Young told the court its officer was denied access to the yard and that some of the vehicles had been relocated elsewhere. From the inception of these court proceedings, each of the breaching parties have repeatedly taken various steps to mislead and obstruct the receiver, a court officer, from discharging its duties, the receiver wrote, noting it took 6 weeks from the time of the order to secure the possession of the 50 assets involved. In its own factum, Legal counsel for United Group Management acknowledged they were found in contempt for two primary reasons. Dhaliwal refused to grant the receiver access to the United Yard and refused to release any fleet assets between November 21st and November 26th, 2024. And United advised the receiver that it would have to pay outstanding lien invoices before United released the assets. The liens in question were held by Edge Transportation, a company related to United Group, and the receiver said they were written after CMF entered creditor protection. Leasor Mitsubishi HC Capital Canada accused Edge Transport, which shared an address with United Group, of registering liens against six assets to which it laid claim. The purported Edge liens were registered well after the effective date of the receivership order and after the significant effort undertaken by the receiver to persuade the United Group to release the fleet assets, the receiver reported. If Edge Transport is not at arm's length with the United Group, as appears to be the case, then the United Group and its representatives have failed to take critical steps towards purging their contempt of court by failing to voluntarily discharge the purported Edge liens. Assets relocated. The receiver notes CMF assets were removed from the United Yard without notice, and Dhaliwal refused to tell the receiver how and where they were moved to. Mangat accepted responsibility for his role in the case, but argued company founder and director Bajwa should not be punished, as he had no knowledge of the events and isn't involved in the day-to-day operations of United Group of Companies. He comes to United's office as it gives him a sense of pride and joy and purpose, and he has had no involvement or decision-making authority on behalf of United with respect to the contemptuous conduct found by this honorable court, but rather such decision-making authority was exercised solely by Mangat, a United Group factum claims. Additionally, Bajwa has a heart condition and requires medical appointments as a result, and prison sentence would be detrimental to his health. It would not be justified to incarcerate or fine McCann, the factum argues. Mangat also said Dhaliwal should not be punished as he was only following Mangat's misguided directions. For this part, Mangat took full responsibility for any actions and omissions that Taj may have engaged in. It gets a little confusing, doesn't it? There's back and forth, but okay, let me continue. I'm almost done. United Management put forth a request that the judge consider a fine or community service instead of jail time, and no penalty for founder Bajwa. It also argued that jailing CEO Mangat would disrupt United Group's and its 400 truck drivers ability to deliver essential goods such as groceries, healthcare supplies, and building materials. The trucking industry as a whole has suffered a staggering number of insolvencies lately, such that a punitive fine and incarceration would only increase the chances that United would become the next corporation facing a receivership insolvency, the company argued. It calls for fines of $5,000 and a period of community service in addition to the $50,000 the court already demanded United Group pay for the receiver for its troubles. And while Mangat has been contrite and accepted responsibility for his actions, United Group's factum points out that the principals at CMF, also found in contempt of court, have instead attempted to justify it. As such, the company argues they should have to pay a larger portion of the receiver's costs. Judge's decision. Justice W.D. Black said, while I am singularly unimpressed with the conduct of the debtors and the debtor management, CMF, I do not find their conduct to warrant time in jail. The CMF representatives have 60 days to pay their $20,000 in costs to Ernst & Young. Failure to do so will result in incarceration. For United Management, in the case of Mr. Mangat, I find that a period of incarceration of 4 days is appropriate, and that the sentence may be served on consecutive weekends so as not to interfere with Mr. Mangat's management role at United, the judge ruled. I find United and United management's contempt sufficiently serious as to warrant and require incarceration, but that a brief incarceration will be sufficient to send the messages of deterrence and denunciation required here. I decline to incarcerate Mr. Dhaliwal or Mr. Bajwa. In the case of Mr. Dhaliwal, it was a close call, but I am prepared to accept that he was following orders from management and accept his acknowledgement that he regrets his actions. I am also taking into account that Mr. Dhaliwal is relatively young and has a young family. The judge agreed, and the founder director Bajwa was not involved in any wrongdoing. And that's the whole article. It's actually a little bit of a convoluted of a whole bunch of different individuals and what they did wrong. But the bottom line, actually, in this particular case is that in the event of a bankruptcy proceeding, things are moved over to a receiver. The receiver has control of all of the assets. And what occurred was that those who were in control of the assets prior to the receiver actually did not really respect the new controllers of such of the assets, and they actually kept operating with the trucks or moved them around, or they more than likely had them out on the road, and they were making money with them or trying to make money with them, and the Ernst & Young was in charge of actually locking them down and evaluating whether you know what should be done with them and stuff like that, as a receiver is designed to do. And they didn't either like the reason that it like to shut the vehicles down or have access to it. It's a control issue, and there's one thing I'd like to make mention of this. I've been in the trucking industry like 35 plus years, and I have been around since long before the Indian people came into Canada, at least in mass. I have experience, how do I say, in the 1990s, and realistically, one of the backlashes of this particular event is that people may point their fingers at a group like a nationality, like an Indian, and say, "Look what that nationality did." And let me be very clear here that I have had experience with many people, not many, I guess a good six or eight companies that have gone bankrupt. And you do not have to be Indian to have a bad attitude. You do not have to be Indian to have a good attitude. I'm of the belief that every single nationality has really positive, good, well, professional people, and they also have people who are immature, and they also have people who are just flat-out crooks. I do not believe that these guys are crooks. I believe these guys lived in a state of panic. When somebody is deeply involved in a financial situation like a business that is going bankrupt, the pressure, the anxiety, the stress puts people in a state of mind that is something that is beyond their the scope of their even own understanding sometimes, and they don't even recognize what their own they're doing themselves. That's not justification, but I've seen people go crazy in a divorce, for instance, where they lose their marbles and they cut off their nose to spite their face. They do terrible things against their, shouldn't say against their own will, but against their own logic, because they're unbelievably emotionally caught up in an event. And bankruptcy is no different. It's no different in a stress level. And to some people, it's even a higher stress level than a divorce, because there's many moving parts. There are also many expectations and honor that is lost in a bankruptcy. When an individual has 50, 80, 100 or more, many employees, even just one employee, you want to do them well. Generally speaking, you want to do them well. And making it look as if you don't have the funds to follow through with what your obligations are, it's humiliating, and it can cause an extreme level of stress. There are some times I've seen flat out a criminal behavior when it comes to bankruptcies. Many years ago, this was, oh goodness, this would have been 25 years ago. There was, I'm not going to mention the name because an offshoot is actually still operating right now, but there was a particular a trucking company in Canada that had been operating, I would call it, unethically for 35 years. And what was absolutely amazing is that they were in operation for that long. Unbelievable. I never recommended that anybody go to that carrier, because every owner operator that went there got screwed. They got unbelievable things taken off of their pay statements. Drivers got shorted on stuff. It was just crooked, 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 and they actually did this for 35 years, which was amazing. And the amazing part of it is that they always found new drivers to drive for them. They even had, I talked to the recruiter at one point, and they said, we have a philosophy here that nobody should work for us for longer than 2 years. And I remember thinking, what do you mean? You don't want drivers to drive for you for longer than 2 years at a time? Yeah, anybody who lasts longer than that, we always have problems with, so we always find a way to get rid of them. The amazing part of that whole story, or one of the amazing parts, is that there were so many drivers available that they could just keep going through. They just came in one end, and 2 years later, at the absolute latest, they were gone. And they screwed unbelievable amount of people. They were unbelievably, I would call them, crooked. But in the end, the guy was, 70 years of age, and the whole world was kind of collapsing at him. And he made an agreement to sell the company. And right at the last minute, Canada Revenue Agency found out that he was selling it. And believe it or not, what Canada Revenue Agency did was they seized the bank accounts. And then there was a whole bunch of problems with unions, and who pays what, and the whole deal came crashing down. And in the end, the guy who had worked there for 35 years, he was 70 years old, and he ended up with zero. At least that's what was promoted, or that was what, maybe he hid some money, I don't know, but bottom line, he ended up not getting paid out for the entire company that he had. Now, one of the things that he did, because Canada Revenue Agency grabbed everything, in his own defense, and I talked to the controller of the company and it got it straight from his mouth, what they did was they took the records of the company, all of the invoices, all of the everything, and in one weekend, they shredded every single piece of paper. And so their creditors had nothing. Their CRA had nothing. The employees had nothing. And it was after all of the paperwork and all of the documents, it was crushed. I'm assuming now that they also did that digitally. You know, they erased things digitally. And then they negotiated with Canada Revenue Agency. And it's actually not that bad to negotiate with Canada Revenue Agency if you have no evidence one way or the other, I guess. I don't know. But I don't know where he is now. I'm more than likely he's passed, because that was 25 years ago. He'd be 95 right now. But anyway, that was unbelievably crooked. It was a great conclusion to an incredible example of a crooked company. That's one thing when an individual does things unbelievably crooked. It's another thing when a company goes through extremely high cash flow crisis and a receiver comes in and they still want to retain power. They want to do as much as they possibly can to continue the cash flow of the company. When a receiver comes in, the managers technically they lose all power and all control, and people act differently when they invest their entire life into something only for it to disappear, and they lose control of it. I'm not justifying what they did, but everybody in some ways does that. Maybe not to the same degree, but panic is something that is you don't know how you're going to panic. Everybody panics in some regards. Maybe I'm assuming that because I panic sometimes. But realistically, if your miles were cut in half and you have to make your truck payment, and 1 month goes into 2 months, goes into 5 months, goes into 8 months, and now you are $30,000 in maintenance debt, and you are 5 months behind on your truck payment, and you have two or three months behind on your mortgage payment, what are you going to do? How is your life? How is your decision-making status? I can tell you that I would not be in a very good state. Right now, I don't worry about it because I don't have debt. But realistically, that's only because I sacrificed and ate crackers and beans for 15 years, 15 years or more. And I hate debt. But not everybody can live without debt, especially if you're young and in the trucking industry. And by young, I mean someone younger than 50. Because generally it takes at least 12 to 15 years to get your business, your lease operator or owner operator cash flow in such a way that you have a paid for truck and you are not going from crisis to crisis. You have a good slush fund. You have more choices when you are debt free, but it can take easily 10, 15 plus years to do that. And once you are at that stage where you are debt free, you have to consistently and strategically make choices that you stay out of debt as well. And that is something that every truck driver, probably every Canadian should be looking at. Say, at what point am I going to be debt-free, and what point will I continue to be debt-free? I'm a big believer in debt-free living, but too many people write off the concept of being debt-free because they say, oh, it's just far too far in the future. No, you should be able to be debt-free within 10 to 15 years under vast majority situations. There's a lot of you could do it in 5, but realistically the goal should not just be debt-free for a particular period of time, but the closer you get to retirement, the less risks you should be taking. And that's the goal, is to be debt-free so you have the greatest chance of actual making choices that you want to make and to make the best choices for you. We oftentimes have my brother and Peter on this podcast, and both of them are either at the point where they're debt-free or they are very close to it, either one, and they have freedom. They're in their 60s and they have freedom. But that freedom does not come within 3 or 4 years of being an owner-operator. That comes, these guys have been in it for 20, 30 years. And realistically, if you want to live a debt-free life, you have to take a longer view ahead of it, or very strategic, very aggressive. You have to focus on it so you don't go into a panic situation. And so that I wanted to bring this out this story out to in summary. Basically, it's not a racial thing. It's not a nationality. Panic is not a racial or a nationality thing. It is deeply in every single race and every single nationality. We all panic in our own ways, and realistically, but for the grace of God, I go. And realistically, I hope that that's the same attitude that you have, and your goal is to be debt free, and to provide for your family in dignity later on in life. Okay, that's pretty much it. I actually enjoyed that article very much. I enjoy his articles for the most part. There's a lot of names back and forth, and I. The only thing I remember is Bajwa is the original owner, and he's probably an aged guy who had the money to start up the event, and had a whole bunch of underlings who basically said, yes, we're going to work our butts off and stuff like that, and he wanted to be a silent owner of the company, so to speak. And that that is not also a nationality thing either. I know a few individuals who own carriers that they have owners who are silent, the silent majority owner. I'm not a big believer at all in prejudicial behavior, treating people like racially. What do they call that? You think lower of another nationality or so. That's not who Canadians are, generally speaking. We all have dinglings in our race. It's something that we as a country all have to deal with, all as a nationality have to all deal with. Anyway, that being said, have yourself a good trip. See you next podcast.
Thanks for stopping by Making Your Miles Count. For further Making Your Miles Count productions, call us at 877-987-9787 or download us at makingyourmilescount.com.